falling for nobody else but you. You caught my eye, and I've got a feeling I'm falling. Show me the ring. And
welcome to your generic live show. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. Yes, I missed my cue to come back from that ad break. This episode, I tell you, it's in contention with some of the funnest stuff I've done. So, thanks for joining us. It's Dale Campbell here with you, missing his cues to come back from commercial break since the beginning of time. I mean, really. I mean, did you realize? Okay, so I think I need to explain that. I did miss, for live listeners, I did miss my cue to come back from commercial break. I do tend to bounce around the studios here during commercial breaks. By bounce around, I mean pretty much walk around. I do a lap, and I go downstairs, I refill my coffee, and I was just dawdling, and I couldn't get the kettle to work, to be completely honest. And I had an ad lot set out that normally covers me, and I normally have to take ads off. But I think I have no idea what happened. I think I was just dawdling around. There will be no more dawdling around because it's GLS. It's live. It's a lie. You know we can't do this show again when this happens. So, speaking of which, I think Tony Abbott has... I think I could use some of this advice for... First from Tony Abbott, actually. Does Tony Abbott... How about I don't do that? Tony Abbott could give some advice to me in this show. I mean, really... Between me not turning my microphone on and me missing cues to come back from ad breaks, I think we've got the complete package here. The live show is a bunch of fun, guys. You should really, if you are a podcaster, by the way, you should come join us. You should come hang out live, 7 till 9 a.m. Eastern Time US on Sundays, or from 10 till midnight on Sundays, Australian Eastern Standard Time. That's Standard Time, not Daylight Standard, to hang out, because we do have a bunch of fun here. Now, oh, wow, that was my ankle. So, Tony Abbott, who is not up to much these days, he hasn't got much going on in terms of the old Tony Abbott. So, Tony Abbott has urged Malcolm Turnbull to revisit some of the key aspects of the infamous 2014 budget and toughen up his message on power prices in some end-of-year advice that will hover over the Turnbull government as it enters in its final parliamentary week of the year. The former Prime Minister also made it clear that he would return to the front bench, suggesting he would be less able to free range on policy ideas if he's bound by the discipline of the cabinet. Does this video have any...
Because if we don't get the budget better, we are ripping off our children and our grandchildren. It's a form of intergenerational theft.
Whoa. There you go. His advice comes to find out.
You don't have to idolise someone to be able to work with them. Peter Costello and John Howard sometimes.
Okay, so what
had
you're saying is.
Moment.
So...
Oh. Okay, that's interesting. So, that the thing going along, great for radio, this is. So, on Sky News, Tony Abbott was asked if he thought that Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull was doing a good job. His reply is, quote, "There's a sense of the PMs and governments always needing to do more," unquote. Or we won't. Either way, so Mr. Abbott said the coalition needs to be sensible, a sen- a sensible centre-right government if it wants to feed off the inroads One Nation and making it into a voter base and improve its position against Labour in the opinion polls. Quote, we need to sharpen the differences, not minimise them.
Holland America Line invites you to write the next great chapter in your life story.
How about I write my own... hang on, what is this an ad for? Hang on.
Mid-sized ships to the most fascinating places on Earth. Come, savour the journey. Call your travel professional or visit hollandamerica.com.
Holland America, not sponsoring the Generic Live Show, but interesting. So, quote, we need to sharpen differences, not minimise them, Mr. Abbott told Sky News on Sunday morning. That would be this morning. With a wholehearted and single-minded focus, unquote. He noted it was, quote, good, we're no longer talking about innovation and agility because, quite frankly, that loses people, unquote. When asked if Mr. Turnbull was doing a good job, there's a sense of prime ministers and governments need to do more. Mr. Abbott also suggested that the coalition should resurge the brutal anti-carbon tax campaign it ran in the lead-up to the 2013 election and rebadge it to focus on power prices as a point of difference against Labour, saying it was a key concern for families and businesses. Labour's policy of 50% or lower power supply coming from renewable energy by 2030 was one area where the opposition was, quote, wafering into Greens territory, Mr. Abbott said, and warned the recent South Australian blackout was, quote, a taste of things to come if a Labour government is elected, according to Tony Abbott. Mr. Abbott downplayed concerns that global warming, saying, quote, although climate change is an issue, it's by no means the most important issue we face, unquote. When asked about a return to cabinet, you don't have to idolise someone to be able to work with them. The last thing he wants to do is offer public advice to the Prime Minister. I'm not the smartest cookie in the cookie jar. I think that's what you're currently doing. Mr. Abbott conceded that he, quote, could have it a little smoother, unquote, as Prime Minister when it comes to managing colleagues and noted there was, quote, one or two things, unquote, he should have consulted more widely on. The topic of same-sex marriage came up, so this will be fun. Mr. Abbott also warned Mr. Turnbull not to change the coalition's position on a same-sex marriage and allow a conscious vote on the issue without first going to an election. Quote, if you solemn pledge to the people, you cannot break it, Mr. Abbott said. Ha! He said, something's in my throat. He said that there were public support for the plebiscite because, quote, the public quite likes the idea of being taken seriously for once. Now, there's a thought. Mr. Abbott also confirmed he is writing a new book. It would say it'd be a manifesto for centre-right politics in Australia and come out when I'm good and ready, unquote. Wow, okay, first of all, our former Prime Minister is doing well, isn't he? Second of all, now, I kid, but second of all, what is with it with former Prime Ministers and they're doing stuff. I just love it. I think John Howard saying that there can't be 50% women in Parliament was a great move, and now this. So, but I do wanna before I could use that advice here on the show. I mean, really, I think that advice. The public quite likes the idea of being taken seriously for once. I think we can do that well and good. genericliveshow@gmail.com. Ding! Okay, I've got my... I checked that off my checklist. My checklist right here. Email shout out. Done. Okay. Here's the deal. I'm going to put that up there. Here's the deal. So, now... Quite seriously, though, email plug. All right, so here's the deal, though, with the same-sex marriage plebiscite. So, that quote, the idea that the people like the public quite likes the idea of being taken seriously for once. Now that I can see. Now that is if you were to make an argument from a centre-right point of view, not that, by the way, I'm centre, period, little left on particular issues, but mainly centre. Leaning left, definitely, but I'm not centre-right. There's a political scale. I need to do that one day. I need to sit down and do Dale's scale of politics. So, the thing is, with the same-sex marriage plebiscite, I can definitely see the argument where if you solemnly pledge to people you can't break it, I get that, but that's not an excuse, because your promise is to... The promise wasn't to deliver a plebiscite. The promise was to deliver... Excuse me. The promise was to deliver same-sex marriage to the people, not to have a plebiscite. That was the promise to the people. So, in this term of government, I cannot see that happening. In terms of the public... quite likes the idea of being taken seriously for once, that's actually legitimate. Now, I don't agree with the former Prime Minister on much at all. But saying that, there's something there. Now, someone who was in support of both a plebiscite and a free vote, a person who was in support of both, for their different reasons, they have different pros and cons, and I weighed them up, and my position, I was a rarity, and I held a position for both. That does add one for the plebiscite, at the plebiscite team, simply because I think it's kind of yeah, it's their choice, and the government is to rule on behalf of the people, if that makes sense. But handing it over to them completely, though, it's kind of like, and what if they were to say no, they didn't want the law changed, and the parliament was to do that, then it would have been a waste of everyone's time, money, and efforts, really, particularly in terms of the campaigns being funded by tax dollars. It would have been a waste of everyone's money. I feel, though, having a voice heard is very important for the government. Now, to be fair, on the flip side of that, they could have done a vote in the parliament anyway, and they didn't need the plebiscite. But say the plebiscite result was yes, and the parliament didn't vote on it, or it got blocked in the Senate to follow the results of the plebiscite, which I doubt if it would have got blocked in the Senate, but who knows? So, if the plebiscite was a yes and the parliament voted no, because the plebiscite is non-binding, we've got to remember this in all of this context, the plebiscite is not bound by anything. So it's free to do whatever it wants. So a constitutional amendment, which is technically called a referendum, thank you, that's bounding. The plebiscite's not bounding. So if the plebiscite says yes and the parliament votes no, we're wasting everyone's time and money anyway. So what are we doing this for? Why are we having this conversation? But I'm just saying that the Tony Abbott saying that the public quite likes the idea of being taken seriously for once. That's definitely an idea that that I can actually see for once. Wow. I'm growing up, it's a bit scary. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show, well, Australians aren't known for their health, but we have finally found the most fattiest postcode. Well, I shouldn't say the fattiest, the most unhealthy postcodes. Does this affect you? Does it? Does it really? We'll find out as we continue here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday with Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us. It's 11:21.
Finally found the most generic live show. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show. Yes. Oh yeah. How could I not incorporate that? Incredible. Not drop because it's not going down. Anyway. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. I sound like the whitest person you know about music and more. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. It's good to be here. Now, are you living in Australia's unhealthiest postcodes? Byron Bay is Australia's booziest location for risky drinking. A town in Tassie tops the list for most smokers. And Western Australia's Pinjarra posts the most dangerous to your waistline, according to the latest figures in the National Health Report Card Reveal. Australia's health tracker's map released this week by Australia's Health Policy Collaboration reveals that your postcode could affect your portness, prosperity for a drink, and a drink potential for health problems, even your blood pressure. An interactive map allows you to tap your postcode, for a screenshot of the health where you live. Broadly, it reveals health snapshots and snippets of Australia's wealthiest postcodes and their healthiest postcodes. Drill down into figures and find your area's rates of high blood pressure, risk of chronic disease, data on smoking, alcohol intake and obesity. So, let's see. That's why we got this going on. It's not biting. All right, here we go. Australia's Health Tracker Area 2016. I am in there. Am I up in there? No data available. Okay. Yes. I'm in Queensland. And I am in Brisbane, Freshwater, Stratford, Redlands. Wow, that gets really narrowed down quickly. Okay, so age by, how healthy is it? That's fairly healthy. Okay, so the age standard range is 28.5 with 3,778 people in there. It is between 28.3 and 30.2 assuming that's around the middle range of, it's around mid healthy. It's not telling me. It's not telling me what it is though. Huh. Okay. Data notes. Something like that. Okay. Select indicator. Oh, that's risk factors. Screening. Deaths. Illnesses. Okay. This is interesting. This is, again, fantastic radio. So. 3.8. So fairly low. Oh, illnesses. Age data data per 100. Diabetes. Oh, 3.6. So, I don't want Western Australia. I want Queensland. QLD. B. QLD B. So that would be around 3.8 out of 100 people are diagnosed with diabetes. Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Wow, fascinating stuff. And we're up on a break. So Western Australia, we'll go a little longer here. So Western Australia, Pemmerdra is the plumpest place in Australia with levels up to 53%. In New South Wales, Raymond Terrace near Newcastle is around 70.8 of adults being obese or overweight. Victoria shows Campbellfield is around 42.8. Queensland, the country town of Warwick, yes, 73.6. That hits home. South Australia, Kinder and Moonta at 74.2. Tasmania, Longsford, Northern Territory, Palmerston, and ACT Majura. There you go. They're the plumpest places in the world. So as we continue here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday, well, it was bound to happen. Something that was bound to happen. Plus, in terms of the US election, something that was bound to happen. Also, we'll give you all the details that you need to know about the biggest story, I think, in a long time in terms of Cuba, as we continue here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday with Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us. It's a pleasure to be here, as per always. Thanks for joining us. It's 11:32. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. It's Dale Campbell here with you. Now, I don't let the jaunty non-copyright music fool you. Fidel Castro, Cuba's former president, has passed away at the age of 90. Here is some audio from the ABC summing it up quite well.
It was as a young radical that Castro debuted on the international stage, inspiring his supporters and overthrowing the Cuban government. The year was 1959, and within weeks, the bearded, cigar-smoking rebel had become Cuba's leader. To many, he was a romantic revolutionary, a persuasive and moving speaker who had the affection of his people. American administrations longed for his demise, fearing a communist state so close to its borders.
Meanwhile, in Havana, expectant crowds await the first appearance of Castro since the invasion began.
In 1961, the US supported a group of exiles who landed at the Bay of Pigs, determined to bring down Castro. But it was a disastrous scheme, and Castro claimed victory.
It shall be the policy of this nation to regard any nuclear missile launched from Cuba against any nation in the Western Hemisphere as an attack by the Soviet Union on the United States.
Soon, though, Cuba was at the center of the 1962 missile crisis, which brought the world to the brink of nuclear war. For decades, Castro stayed close to the Soviet Union, and when it collapsed, Cubans faced poverty and despair. The saga of Elion Gonzalez, a young Cuban boy who was caught in a tug-of-war between the US and Cuba, seemed to galvanize the Cuban people, not only behind their country, but also behind their leader.
Viva la revolución!
Castro was famous for his long speeches. It was after one of them, in October 2004, that he fell, breaking bones in his arm and leg. He recovered from those injuries, but never regained his vigour. His private life was always a mystery, but he's believed to have fathered 8 children during a marriage that lasted more than 30 years. He remained until the end, though, a revolutionary, vowing to fight for his country until his death.
That's courtesy of the ABC there. That's right. Cuban revolutionary leader Fidel Castro, who built a communist state on the doorstep of the United States for 5 decades to find efforts to topple him, has passed away at age 90. With shaking in his voice, President Raul Castro announced on state television that his older brother died at 10:29 p.m. on Friday local time. He ended the announcement by shouting the revolutionary slogan, quote, "Towards victory always," unquote. Mr. Castro has been in poor health since an intestinal alignment that nearly killed him in 2006. He led Cuba for 5 decades and was the world's 3rd longest surviving head of state, serving head of state after Queen Elizabeth II and the King of Thailand. He took power in 1959 revolution and ruled Cuba for 49 years with mix of charisma and iron will, creating a one-party state and becoming a central figure in the Cold War. Mr. Castro claimed to survive 634 attempts or plots to assassinate him, mainly masterminded by the Central Intelligence Agency and the US-based exile organization. They have included poison pills, a toxic cigar, exploding molluscs, and a chemically tainted diving suit. Another alleged plan giving him the power that would make his beard fall out, so undermine his popularity. Wow. Despite the plots, US-backed exile invasion at the Bay of Pigs and 5 decades of economic sanctions, Mr. Castro outlasted 9 US presidents, from Dwight Eisenhower to Bill Clinton stepping down while George W. Bush was in office. His brother, Raul Castro, is the president of Cuba presently. As mentioned in that clip, famous for his long speeches, Castro holds the record for the longest speech at the UN for 4 hours and 29 minutes, recorded on September 26th, 1960, according to the UN's website. One of his longest speech on record lasted 7 hours and 30 minutes on February 24th, 1998, after the National Assembly re-elected him for a 5-year term as president. Mr. Castro will be in a Santiago cemetery. He will be interred there on December 4th. So that, and like I said last hour, it's something that's going to impact the world. As we head into the final weeks of 2016, this is going to open up, this will open up 2017 to probably also be kind of an odd year to watch. Not that 2016 has not been weird, but I think 2017 is going to be interesting to see, as earlier this year we saw Brexit, we saw that, we've seen now this, we've seen, I had to bring it up again, but it'll be coming up later in this segment anyway, Donald Trump getting elected. All of these things is going to make for interesting, reflecting back on it. I mean, we're at November 27th, but I think looking back on it, I think 2017 is also going to be shaping up to be kind of an odd year in terms of who aligns with who. Who do we fully embrace Cuba again? I mean, the U.S. embassy is open there, but we're not fully engaged with them, if that makes sense, as it stands. And I think that opened, early this year or late last year. I'm not too sure on those dates. I should have researched that before. Should have came on air. That was in 2015, yes. That was in 2015. Yeah, 2015, that reopened. So, but still, we haven't heard much of US dealing with Cuba per se. And my opinion on Castro, and again, you can email the show and disagree with me. Fully get in contact with the show if you do disagree with this. But I don't agree with what Castro said, and I'm not familiar with Castro because I didn't grow up knowing half the stuff he was doing until quite recently, because that's just, I'm following the news, and that's just how it is. I think for me, you have to applaud someone who stands behind their country and serves their country. So that's, you have to applaud that sort of behavior, and it takes a lot to do that, and to do that over 50 years is that's a lot of time. That's over twice my current age. If you want to go back in the first day and discover how old I am, then more power to you. But I think the point is, I think that's a lot of time, and can that be undone with doing trading with other countries? I mean, I had brunch with my parents this morning, and we were talking about this exact story, and I said to them, I said, well, with the US opening the embassy, the US hasn't done anything in terms of that. We as Australia have no interest in going into Cuba. What would we get? And I say that, and I'm like, well, is there something in Cuba that could be useful for us in terms of a trade thing? I mean, Cuba could import things from us. Not that we make much in this country anymore, but that's not the point. The point is that there's still an importing and exporting opportunity. So, only time will tell. Meanwhile, speaking of time will tell, there has been calls for recounts. But I did have an article that was better than doing the one I have, but because things don't like me, and the Generic Live Show is free for everyone, and while we appreciate listener support, we don't have paid subscription to newspapers. So, I say that. Anyway, so the Clinton campaign top lawyer, Mark Elias, said Saturday that the Democrats had not planned to seek a recount since its own investigation indicated there is no hacking or significant fraud in the U.S. election. Quote, but now that the recount has been initiated in Wisconsin, we intend to participate in order to ensure the process proceeds in a manner that is fair for all sides, Alicia said in a post on the Medium website. The announcement comes the day after the Wisconsin Election Board approved the recount requested by Green Party candidate Jill Stein, of all people. Stein said she wants to test the integrity of the U.S. voting system against the manipulation or political hacking into the U.S. electoral system. Stein raised $5.8 million of the $7 million U.S. needed to cover the fees and legal costs for recounts in three states, according to her campaign website. If Stein follows through with the promises for recounts in other U.S. states, including Pennsylvania and Michigan, quote, we will take the same approach in those states as well, Illis said. In a tweet, Jill Stein said, my campaign goal, transparent election procedures to ensure election results can be verified, that every vote counts. Hashtag recount 2016. Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan were considered as battleground states where Republican Donald Trump edged out Clinton by relatively thin margins. Although Trump has won the electoral college tally, Hillary Clinton will win the national popular vote by more than 2 million ballots when the final results are tallied. Green Party candidates has cited unspecific anomalies as grounds to push the recounts. Quote, after a divisive and painful presidential race, reported hacks into voter and party databases and individual email accounts are causing many Americans to wonder if our election results are reliable, Dr. Stein said on her website. Trump, who has avoided making comment upon the recount until Saturday, labeled the Green Party candidates as a efforts as a scam because, well, of course he did. Quote, this is a scam by the Green parties for an election that has already been conceded and the results of this election should be representative instead of being challenged and abuse, which is exactly what Jill Stein is doing, Trump said. Quote, this recount is a way for Jill Stein, who received less than 1% of the vote overall and wasn't even on the ballot in many states, to fill her coffers with money, most of which she'll never even spend on this ridiculous recount, unquote. Wow. Okay. Wow. Recounts. Recounts are coming, I can tell you. I don't... That's not confirmed, by the way. This is Dale Campbell going out on a whim here. Recounts aren't confirmed, but I think the best thing for them to do is to do recounts. Look at our election, and, well, we didn't have a leader for 5 days, I believe. Didn't have a leader, I should say, because that's not entirely true. We didn't have a decided leader in that time. What I will say is, I think a recount would not be necessary, I don't think. There's too much of a swing that would need to happen for Clinton to win those states and to have the Electoral College change their mind, if that makes sense. I think that they're too far in to kind of have that happen. But I'm surprised I'm only hearing of a recount at this late stage, so it's surprising, I'll say that, as we continue here on the Generic Life Show for a Sunday. Well, you know, sometimes stories come across my desk, and I just smile at the fact that these sort of stories happen in Australia. I think that we've got probably one of the most Australian stories that I've heard in a long time. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show, thanks for joining us. It's 11:51.
This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday with Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us. Now, there are some things that happen in Australia that make me think that this has got to be one of the strangest places to do news. I mean, you've got serious news that happens, then you've got stories that just make you smile. Now, there's a man, a Brisbane man, by the name of Daniel McConnell, who has been dubbed Captain Underpants after, get this, chasing down a runaway driver. He says he wasn't trying to be a hero. His shot to national fame after he pursued the man who smashed into a fish and chip shop in Brisbane's suburb of Hendra. What would that have been? On Tuesday morning? On Friday morning, I think. Friday morning, I believe. So I'll let the story talk for itself, but this is the best
thing ever.
Say
goodbye to the Cape Crusader. The neighbourhood of Hendra in Brisbane has its own everyday superhero.
His name is Dan McConnell, and he's gone viral around the world.
Breaking news out of Brisbane now. An unlicensed driver has been charged after allegedly smashing his car into a takeaway shop.
He's being hailed as an Aussie hero, the Good Samaritan who chased down a man fleeing the scene of a crash in nothing but his undies.
Daniel McConnell lives across the road, and when he came out here after hearing this huge smash, he saw the driver trying to run away from the scene. So, Daniel, what did you say to the guy?
I said, mate, like don't be fleeing the scene. And he goes, oh, mate, I fell asleep behind the wheel. And I said, oh, I don't care if you fell asleep behind the wheel. Don't be fleeing the scene. And he goes, don't be a hero, mate. And I wasn't trying to be a hero.
But to his neighbours in Hendra, Daniel McConnell is a hero in spades, or in this case, in jocks.
So I was in my jocks and jumped in my car and started chasing him up the street, and then I seen the police, and boy, the police, and they went down the back streets and end up catching him.
Stand down, Superman. Hendra's Captain Underpants has the neighbourhood covered. And a hero's welcome to Dan. He's here in the studio with us this morning. Big fella.
This story is just, oh my God, it's all sorts of amazing. Yeah, so the cliff notes of the story is, so I was in me jocks and jumped in me car and started chasing him down the street, he told the 7 program Sunrise. He was trying to do the good thing and help out Mr. McConnell, who flown from Brisbane to Sydney for the interview on the Sunrise program, and said that people had been asking him for an autograph. He also credited his wife and his newfound superstar status, saying if she hadn't woken him up, he would have never ended up helping the police catch the driver. Quote, the real hero here is my partner, he said. This story is just... So, someone crashed into a fish and chip shop, which you don't get more... I'm sorry, you don't get more Australian than a really good fish and chip shop, by the way. There's a good fish and chip shop around the corner from my house, which I'd do anything for that fish and chip shop. So, how am I not 120 kilos the way I talk on this show? So, anyway, so you crash in the fish and chip shop, allegedly stole something according to early reports, but that's not confirmed. So, and then the person decides to take off. And this guy decides to jump in his car in his underwear and chase this guy down to help the police. This is just an all round feel good story to head into next week, knowing that these people exist out there. This is your there's some good in the world story. This is the happy news story of the week, and that's going to do it for us. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show. Yet another show in the can. genericliveshow@gmail.com if you want to get in contact with the show. Just as a reminder, a little bit of housekeeping. Next week, December 4th is next week. It's December, so we're going to start playing Christmas songs as bumper music. We'll still have our regular intro, of course, but bumper music will be starting to be Christmas music as we head towards the big day. So we've got three more regular shows. Then we've got the Orphans Christmas on Christmas Day, the Best of 2016 on January 1. That's a pre-release. Live shows return on the 8th, but that are not regular shows. So the 8th will be the biggest stories of 2016. The 15th will be the predictions show for 2017. And normal, regular, fun shenanigans shows like this one will return on January 22nd. So there you go. Thanks for joining us, everyone, here on the Generic Live Show. My name's Dale Campbell, and I'll see you all next time. Thanks for joining us. It's midnight.
This has been a podcast of the Geek AM Media Network, where you put your geek in and geek out. For more geeky goodness, head over to geek-io.net. Copyright 2016.